Hey, this is Dave with Screen Geeks Radio.
And this is Barry.
I'm here with gentlemen from Attitude for Destruction, three of the gentlemen behind it. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves for the second time, because Dave was an idiot and turned the mic off.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. This is Ford Austin. I directed Attitude for Destruction.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Simon Brzezinski, and I played the role of Mark.
Hey there, this is Jed Rowan, the actor playing JJ in a sequel to The First Interview.
Not that I feel dumb or anything. I'm going to let Barry start off this time.
All right, well, what we were talking about earlier, we were talking about just the reaction that audiences at the beginning from your film for it. And I can certainly vouch that I don't think indifference is going to be a factor here. This is a take no prisoners and kill all the hostages horror film. And I think people are going to react to it that way. First of all, I want to get the Guns N' Roses thing out of the way. Did you intend for this movie to be a homage or a parody of them?
It's a parody of the whole ludicrous behavior that rock stars... just their lifestyle, the fact that somebody can be so outrageous and basically wear a costume in their life when they work, and nobody sort of goes, okay, what's with that big hat that guy's wearing, or can you just like put down the whiskey bottle for a second and talk to me like an adult, or, you know, so it definitely, it is a parody, but it's also, it also is an homage, because that whole world is very cool. And we'd all love to be rock stars, and it's just going to be inherently like that, just parody and homage. So,
Which explains why you liked me calling it the decadent metal of the 80s. Okay, now I see where you're going with that.
I mean, just to add to that, that's one of the reasons why I came aboard on this project, specifically because I got to be a rock star for a few days. I really respect musicians. I love music, and I just wanted to know what it would be like to be on the stage, on a stage, playing an instrument and singing into a microphone. So that's one of the reasons why I joined the crew and the cast.
So did you actually play?
Did I actually play the instrument? I did. I tried. I wasn't very successful at it, but I was doing my best. Colby Vail, the star of the movie. Actually showed me a few tricks on the bass guitar of how to make my scenes look as realistic as possible. So I did get a chance to experiment with that and try to see if I can hit a few chords.
But you did perform the song in the movie.
Yes, but I did perform the song in the movie. So there was a lot of preparation on my part to do just to make the whole sequence look really, really good and realistic. And
so this begs a question, actually, if I can really quick. You say it's Colby's movie. From my perspective, I would say it was more your story. Which way would you see?
Just don't tell Colby that.
I have a perspective. I actually think it's all about JJ.
JJ does die away that most men would like to go. I'll just leave it at that.
I'm just joking, you know. But to add on to that earlier, you know, I grew up as a teenager, as a kid, in 80s glam rock. And I think whatever you're like 12, 13, 14, a little adolescent kid, you, whatever the popular culture was then, it always has a special place in your heart. So when I heard they were doing this movie, I was all over it because, you know, it just brings back all those memories of like Hit Parader magazine, circus, following groups like LA Guns, Crocus, Wasp, Quiet Riot.
Warrant.
I mean, bands
Cinderella,
that...
Cinderella, Winger.
You go down the list.
Went to Winger.
You go down the list, and it wasn't just
Ozzy.
It wasn't just the big bands that everyone knew. It was all the little struggling bands and the whole
crew,
the whole subculture that surrounded it and all you read about it, you know. So it was a lot of fun to be part of, you know.
That is very well put. That's awesome. Jed, you're so right, dude. Because that's like what we all felt like Jed. Like, we loved that band, and we loved that time period, and getting to celebrate that was
and
what...
I never was into grunge. When the 90s came along, I was in my 20s, and I never got into grunge.
Yeah,
I never
fuck
got
grunge.
Into
fuck it.
I, the popular culture, when I was a kid, that's what I'm into, and it was great to, you know, be a part of a project like this.
And I disagree, because I was very much into grunge. So.
Oh yeah? Fuck you.
Alice in Chains is always going to live forever.
Okay.
The soundtrack is terrific. What came first, the songs or the screenplay?
The soundtrack. The whole thing was produced by the record label to promote the band and the band's music. So the band's music there actually is a Hollywood Roses out in Hollywood, and they perform at the Viper Room and the Whiskey and everywhere up and down Sunset, and Colby's the lead singer of that. And they also have another band, Dope Snake. That's the band's music that we used. So it's, again, it's Colby and all those same band members as another band that is not a Guns N' Roses tribute band, but it's their Dope Snake band. And they're touring all over the country this summer.
South America too.
And South America. And Rocklahoma.
This is some really dark material. Was it ever, did it ever weigh on the set, or was it just a fun set? What was the experience like?
I'll let the actors.
For myself, it was great to come to work every day and work with this very talented ensemble cast. It didn't really seem like work at all. It seemed like everyone just came together and we were all hanging out doing something that we all love to do. So that's why, no one came in with an ego or I'm better than you, or, you know, you have a bigger part than I do and this and that. It was nothing like that. It was just about having fun, coming together, and working towards a common goal. And I think that if you have that kind of chemistry with other people, you can make great things happen. I mean, really.
I've worked with Ford in many films, and Ford Austin is just an incredible director, and he has a very unique ability to make all the actors very relaxed and to loosen them up enough where they can really be creative, and that's what the set was like. I had the most fun I've ever had on a set, and I work with a lot of actors that I've worked with before, like Anne-Marie. And Colby was just fantastic as an actor and a person. And Simon was just great performances, but great to be around. And just no one had those big egos. And it was
exactly
a real ensemble unit. And I think a lot of that can be, attributed to Ford and how he ran the set.
And I think in a lot of productions, people don't really get a chance to hang out with one another at times. They, they either hang out at their trailers or... I don't want to be stereotypical, but they may run a scene a few times before they actually shoot it, but they do not quote unquote hang out and have fun with one another and actually talk about other things besides what we're doing at the moment. So I think that really helped make us maybe more fleshed out and more come alive on the screen, as opposed to just make it look like we're all acting like we like each other.
Well, you talk about being fleshed out. Your character is, I think, by design, with good reason, fleshed out more than others. I won't do any spoilers, but you're haunted by what happened, what led to your fame, all that stuff. And it's a little bit more taxing than everyone else had to be. Did that relaxation help with you in that case as well?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Very much so. Again, I knew that coming into this film, after I read the script, I knew that the world around me was very absurd, and I kind of had to be the anchor, if you will, and make everyone realize that no, we are still in reality, and this could happen to someone. And what if it did happen to you? How would you react? So I really wanted to approach my role as honestly as possible. And again, kind of just anchor the film against, as you mentioned, I guess against my co-star, Colby Vale, since you mentioned that I also am starring in this film. That was my whole thinking when I went into the film.
Cool. Okay, well, let's talk about the gore for a little bit, because this is a horror movie. It is a slasher film. I'd said earlier that there wasn't much gore, and as I thought about it, it's not that there isn't much gore, it's just the opening scene, I'll just say, it's amped up a bit. Was that kind of on purpose to let the crowd, okay, we've got the gory part and there's more to come, but there's also going to be a story here and we can get into that now?
Yeah, we basically wanted to just turn it up as much as we could so that people would get grabbed right away and just go, wow, I gotta watch the rest of this movie. Because a lot of the low-budget films, people will look at them and they'll just turn them off. And also another reason that I wanted to amp it up is for anybody who may not be aware of what the movie is. I just wanted to lay it out there so they would know to turn it off and go watch Remains of the Day or The English Patient. This movie, it's like, okay, for instance, Mighty Mike Murga, who plays the blood-covered midget, he and I did a movie together called Slaughter Party for Troma a little while back, and we became friends. And he wasn't originally in the script. So I'm sitting there and I'm going, well, okay, so I have a naked girl hanging upside down on a 10-foot tall inverted cross, and another girl who's covered in blood and is going to stab her and eat her body and eat her entrails on camera, and a band, a rock band right there in the room with them playing, sort of accompanying this whole sacrificial scene. What can make it like really gel? What can really make the scene complete? And I thought, I need a blood-covered midget with a goblet that he can drink blood out of and put body parts in, and really just kind of run around without his shirt on, screaming and growling like a dog, and cover him in blood. And then he brought out these little sport pants, little sort of
Speedo
sport pants. So he looks sort of like a little muscular, bloody wrestler.
When he jumps out, it kind of catches me as a horror version of like a Family Guy non sequitur. Out of nowhere, look, it's a blood-covered midget.
And that's exactly what it is, because that's what we all want as fans. Yeah. If every movie, at any given time, there was going to just be a midget in there, I think there'd be a lot more movies being sold. Right.
And also, there might be less gore as the film progresses, but there's more vomit.
So you have that.
Yeah.
So use the vomit as a metaphor for the gore.
Kind of precisely, yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, after you just pull somebody's heart out and eat it, we did that. We chopped a head off. We had a lot of blowjobs and a lot of like naked girls and like
the whole rock and roll lifestyle, of course.
Yeah, it's rock and roll, blood, guts, and sluts.
That's
so
right.
To throw the vomiting in there was sort of a no-brainer.
What's left?
Yeah, this is like, why not go through every threshold you can on this?
I guess the sequel will introduce snot.
Yeah.
Boogers or something.
And I'll get Bridget the Midget to come in and be in the movie. So we'll have a female blood-covered midget. And, you know, maybe like a flock of midgets in there.
Okay. Wow. A flock. I've never quite heard of that.
Right, right. Maybe there's like a mob of midgets, or a group, or a gaggle of dwarves. I don't know.
A gang.
Yeah, probably a gang. Or maybe a murder of midgets. That's
Wow. Okay. I have to ask Jed. I bugged Simon about if he played the bass in the movie. There's a scene where Jed plays a nice little blues little riff with the slide guitar. Did you actually play that?
Yes, I did. And you're not the first one to ask me that. A lot of people are like, "Hey, did you really, you know, play that?" And slide guitar is a very bottleneck blues slide is very important to me. It's like a, I hate to use this word, it's a kind of a spiritual thing for me.
And I heard bottleneck blues slide. I had
really trained and tried to really get the skill under my belt in a very formal way, taking like for years. And now it's just kind of surfacing now in this film. And Ford, you know, let me do it. He was very excited about it. And I'm very, very, very excited about that moment in the film.
It's fun because, in a way, Ford really, you really did take a chance that it could have pulled everyone out of the movie out of nowhere and somehow just added a whole ton to it.
It's because it's all part of the world of music, so it adds another layer to his character, which, okay, so why did he become a record producer? Who is this guy? So just by having that, you're like, oh, well, yeah, he has a genuine interest in music, and he's knowledgeable about it, so of course he's a record producer. And if you look on the wall behind him, those gold records are real. I actually got those from the guy who produced Midnight Train to Georgia.
Gee.
And so Midnight Train to Georgia is hanging on the wall in his office.
Well, what I like to think of it too is like something so spiritual and emotional, like slide guitar, is played by this character who has become a very evil character, a very cynical and Machiavellian corporate executive. And I thought that was a really good kind of a division in the character. And it lent a lot to the depth of it, I felt.
Very true, very true. Well, you've talked about the movie so much. Do you have another question?
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay, let's do one more, then we'll get to
okay.
the
Okay, well, I want to ask Jed, you're a veteran of these horror films. Are you at the point now where it still excites you to get these kind of scripts, or are you just like, please, somebody send me a romantic comedy, please, something I could do with Julia Roberts?
Well, you know, all actors would like to be in huge films with big budgets, with big paydays, and all of that, and I would be lying if I said I didn't. However, I think these small films just allow you so much freedom and creative freedom and flexibility, and there's so much fun to be had with them. I've been in some films, you know, with some bigger name actors, and I had a lot of fun in those too, but, you know, you hear things with other projects and everything that, you know, bigger films have bigger politics and bigger BS. And so I like to just keep working with people I like and having fun and being really creative. You know,
I even think that what you said sort of does have another side to him beyond the gore and the horror. Like, I directed this live action short last year called Tiny Dancer, and it's this ballet short film. It's not horror, and it, you know, it qualified for the Academy Awards this year, and it nice. Almost got shortlisted, and I mean it yes. won several awards from the Southern California Motion Picture Council and a couple of others. And Jed just plays like this gay station a stage manager in it, and it's like this really warm little heartwarming drama. And Jed's just great in it, and so it's like not a horror. I also make him do a bunch of other things. Like, I did a series about the Wright brothers, and I made him play Dr. Fu Manchu in that, and that had Ethan Phillips in it as Teddy Roosevelt, and it had a couple of other big names, like this girl who starred in Mimic 2, and The Haunted, and The Haunting. But Jed does so many other things besides horror. It's incredible. He's just so versatile as an actor. And Simon is, too.
Yeah,
Simon. Like, I was having a talk with Simon about just, he's like, totally, like, should be one of these big sci-fi TV series actors, like a Battlestar Galactic lead, you know what yeah. I mean?
As an actor, too, seeing another actor, particularly in this role, in Attitude, with such range, emotional range, where he really ran the gamut of emotions. That's not easy to do as an actor, and he really pulled it off. And it's great as an actor to see another actor really hit it like that.
Cool. Thank you, Jed.
He's slipping him a 20. I mean, no. So we've talked about the film. You can see the trailer, I'm guessing, on your MySpace page. I've seen it on YouTube as well. How can people see the film itself?
The film is coming out next month on DVD. It'll be in Blockbuster and Netflix and Tower.com, Best Buy, Target, everywhere the DVDs are sold or rented or whatever. And, you know, we sort of didn't get a chance to put any of the extras on the DVD because the distributors were so excited to get it out. So I'm going to be cutting all those extras and interviews from this Horror Fest convention and all the music scenes that we didn't use in the movie that were cut for time, and I'm going to put those on our MySpace page as well, so all the fans can go to the myspace.com/attitudefordestruction and get all the extras to go with their DVD.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for your time, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll,
man.
That was great.